Archie have become popular if you had not given away the server code? Could you have sold server code for Archie when you first started?
There's certainly an evolution going on the net. If we'd gone to the people originally and said, we have this really spiffy idea called Archie, and it's up at McGill, and it's flooding our network, and I'm going to sell it to you. Most people, if not everybody, probably would have said, go away, don't bother me, don't be silly, we don't charge for software on the net. Now we go to them after it's been up and running for a while. It's a demonstrably useful service. It's you know, not to put too fine a point on it, I don't want to sort of boast, but it is a useful service. It gets a lot of use every day. And so the people that are running it, when we came to them and finally said, look, you've now got it, you've been running it for a while, if you want us to continue to support it, you'll have to help. Almost all of them turned around immediately and said, sure, no problem, we understand. Now, again, we're not charging thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. However, we are covering expenses right now. And
Doesn't that violate the spirit of the net, though?
Well, okay, I guess I didn't answer the question. I gave a little speech. So I think what you're seeing is the spirit of the net has to evolve a little bit. The spirit of the net is still there. I still am giving my own back to the net. I go to the IETF, and no one pays me to do that. I have worked to support, and I go to conferences and give talks and so on that I don't charge for. But there is, let's face it, what could be done on an internet of 10,000 machines or 100,000 machines becomes infeasible in an internet of 1 million machines. A good example of that is Veronica, which is an Archie-like service that came out for Gopher. It tried to index all of Gopher space and make that information available. And I watched Veronica go through in a matter of a few weeks what took us a year to go through, that period of interest, more interest, explosive growth, flood that have to get it forked off to other sites, what are we going to do about supporting it, documentation. You know, there's a whole lifetime, and what's happened now with the size of the net and the popularity of services, that lifetime has been condensed. What took us a year to get to the point where it was insupportable took Veronica the space of a couple of weeks to become insupportable. What used to work on the 100,000 node machines, node net, we're going to have trouble doing it the same way. Now, that's not to say I don't want to see another Archie. I most definitely don't want to discourage experimentation. But one way we can do this is take a step back and say, okay, how can we create an environment where we can still allow these pilot services to be brought up, but without, quite frankly, melting the wire to your university or your research center or whatever when you first turn it on? I don't know the answer to that. I only know that it's a problem we're going to have to address. And I have every faith that the problems will be addressed, because there's a hacker feeling out there that's going to continue and no one's going to kill it. It's just a question of, okay, the rules have changed a little bit of environmental change, so Darwinian selection will perhaps find a slightly different way of arriving at the same ends. The hackers aren't going to stop hacking. You can be sure of that.
You talk about volunteering your time to the IETF. Is that process going to continue, or are we going to have to fund the IETF through some kind of an IETF tax?
Interesting. There's been a debate going on the last couple of years. The IETF said the same explosive growth that the rest of the internet has had. My cut on it is it still works. I think the process is still best served by people coming there as individuals and not as representatives of special interest groups or particular slices of the community. My own expectation and my own hope is that it continues the way it is. Now, whether that's true in 10 years, I can't say. I think anyone who tries to predict out more than a year or two in this business is crazy. But certainly I think in the next year or two, there are problems to be addressed, no question about it. But I think that, yes, volunteers is still the way to go for at least the next year or so.
Well, but the federal government has been pitching in a good $1 million a year to make the IETF work. And if that money goes away, how does a process like the IETF happen? Do we raise user fees? Do we raise fees on attendees? Do we put a tax on TCP/IP software? What's the right way to fund this process of moving technology out into the internet?
Good question. All right. There's a perceived value in the IETF. People are very happy with what comes out of it. People are very happy with the well, not everybody's happy with the process, but I think people are usually happy with the results. I think it would be fair to expect sponsors of the IETF to sort of pick up the slack if the government has to cut back. Now, I don't necessarily see the government has to cut back given the talk of commitment to networking. But let's assume the government did cut back. I think it would be appropriate to accept donations from companies that see a benefit, provided we could make sure that this is strictly hands-off donations. And, you know, there's a pot you pay into if you think it's a good service. Hey, I got no money. I'm a very small startup. But I would certainly pay larger fees if that's what it took. Now, the other thing we might have to look at, the IETF is getting very large. There's been a lot of talk of breaking it into smaller pieces. If they're smaller pieces, it wouldn't be quite so expensive on a per-group basis, although you'd lose the you know, the cheap donuts and the cheap coffee, because it all has to be done for everybody. Let's just take the worst scenario. There is a cutback. I'd like to think that some companies pick up the slack because it's a good thing, and it's the cheapest investment in standards you'll get. If not, then we'll have another talk, and we'll see how it can go. I don't know if that's a real problem yet.
You talk about the increase in size of the IETF. Can we do useful work in working groups in a assembly of 1,000 people?
Interesting. There was a debate a couple of, just before, it wasn't the last, it was about 6 months ago. Let's sort of nail down a time here. About all this incredible rise, and what are we going to do? We start training courses. Somebody suggested an entrance exam. Quite frankly, if there had been an entrance exam, I never would have started going, and I like to think that I can contribute to the process. So I did a posting at one point to the IETF mailing list and said, is there anyone out there who can honestly claim that their working group lost a significant amount of time because of the large number of people in the room who weren't up to speed? No one answered. Now, there may be nobody ever answers my postings, but I think more appropriate is to conclude, well, no, they're actually not getting in the way. It is a fairly cheap way to train your people. Send them to the IETF and they find out what's going on. On the other hand, you'll get the interesting idea from the strangest person. You don't know this guy from out from left field happens to have just the connection, just the answer we need to the problem. I would encourage, no, I don't want 30,000 people there. I go to Interop for different reasons, but it's a completely different experience given the scale. But currently, I think work is getting done because the interested people sit down the front. They participate. Most work is done by a small core group, and the others act as sort of a sanity check. And you can have a fairly large number of people representing the user community doing sanity checks without it really interfering. And I think right now, certainly in the areas I work in, which I don't try to do routing and I don't try to do very low-level stuff, but the areas I work in, I can claim right now that we're getting work done, and they're not. The large numbers of people aren't particularly getting in the way, and we're getting more work done. You know, there's a lot of work to do. I wouldn't discourage any volunteer that wants to come and help. So at the moment, I think it's a manageable problem.
You started a company, and you didn't call it Waze Inc. or Archie Inc. You called it Bunyip Information Systems.
Yeah. Why not Archie?
What is Bunyip?
All right, this is a great question, which I think means from the marketing point of view, it's a great company name since you have to ask. I have a rather checkered history. I was born in California. I grew up for a long time in Australia. Now I live in Canada, and I moved around a lot. One point in my misspent youth, I read a book in Australia. One of the lead characters was Bunyip McDuff. Now, I don't remember too much about the book, but I remembered the name and thought, this is a nice name. It has ties to Australia because that's where I read the book. And it just seemed like it's a kind of name that people would remember. It's also got IP in the title, Bunny IP, as some people call it, which doesn't hurt. And it's something that was always down in the sludge of my subconscious that seemed to be a nice name. Now, when we went to name the company, one obvious choice was to try to get an Archie in the title, but we're not actually in the software business, and we're not in the Archie business. We like to think we're in the publishing business. We make information available to people. We process it. We take it and do some value added to it and give it back to you. And so really, we wanted something that was divorced from an actual service or an actual protocol, because I really think the important thing to realize is nobody cares. The average user doesn't care what the protocol is. They want the information. And I like to think that we're trying to take a very broad, very general, very non-protocol specific approach. If you've got an access method that will get me useful collections of information, I will try to write an interface to it or find a gateway that does get to you. And I think that's a very, very internet way of doing things. You've got useful stuff, I'll do the hack that gets me to it. Somebody else gets useful stuff, I'll do another hack. Now, if we do it right, it's not really hacking. It's component by component, piecewise building. I mean, that's how you build brick walls, one brick at a time. So, yeah, basically that's what it is. It was an attempt to step back from a special service, one protocol, and say, you know, we're not so flippant. We can remember our childhoods. We don't remember all the details. But, yeah, we're not so bad. That's sort of where it came from.
Well, there you have it. We've been talking to Peter Deutsch, and this has been Geek of the Week.
This has been Geek of the Week, brought to you by Sun Microsystems and by O'Reilly & Associates. To purchase an audio cassette or audio CD of this program, send electronic mail to radio@ora.com. Internet Talk Radio. The medium is the message.